This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Good morning, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're here on day four after just about 3 hours sleep, as you heard us wrap up last night after the Piff and Pop show last evening. But this morning, I thought we'd kick off the day four with a celebrity, particularly not just the convention, but of life in general, a leader in our arts. Please welcome Lisa Mena. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how you doing, Scott?
I'm fantastic. It's always good a chance to chat with you. You know, when we were at FISM a few years ago, I was going around, I was getting a few conversation. You're saying, I don't have time because now's the time. During FISM, you know, we're visiting with everybody, you know, and there are people you don't get to see but once every 3 years. And you said, I get to see you every once in a while, you know, so let's talk later at more at length. And then we saw each other at Johnny Thompson's service, and then here again now. You know, that you're really traveling a lot, and you said you're living in the Virgin Islands, or where are you now,
kind of? Yeah, I live in my shoes. People really want me to live someplace, but yeah. I pay my taxes in Texas, my possessions are in Canada, and when I'm resting, I usually rest in the St. John and the Virgin Islands, but mostly I just travel.
Yeah. I liked it once that someone introduced me as not from Houston or Dallas or Midland or any place. He said, here's a guy from Texas, you know.
So I think that people should know that we've known each other since I was about, what, 14?
About that, yeah.
And I'm 55 now.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed that. Wow, that's making me seem old.
When you were 18 and I was 14, you were a lot older.
Yeah, I guess that's right then, too. And I've seen you grow and do the kinds of things you've done, such that that's why that last evening that Richard had recognized you in front of the entire group, you know, with a wonderful award. Exactly what did that say, or what was that for? What did it say? Just in recognition, I think.
I think it was because there was a time when I was alone in the world of sleight of hand. Myself and Joan Horowitz were the only two women magicians in the 20th century that were working sleight of hand magic, and June was, well, 54 years older than me, so about every 50 years a sleight of hand artist was coming along. And I think that's predominantly because we used to hear the expression as women growing up, darling, don't let him know how clever you are, you'll never marry. So there wasn't much of a place for the social graces of close-up sleight of hand magic. On stage, it had a little bit of a different appeal. And you know, the funny thing is, in Asia, royal women and women of highest status always had to cultivate, as in every culture, some kind of entertainment. And in the Victorian times, a woman would draw or sing or play the piano. But in Asia, it was very typical for a wealthy, high-status woman to cultivate manipulation magic. Which is why we have so many great female manipulators. Huh. It's a long-time tradition that...
I never heard that.
Well, you know...
There we go.
It's a long-time tradition in Asia that one of the parlor entertainments they did in the last centuries was close-up magic or mostly manipulation, because it was often silent.
Because in the Occidental world, I guess I think of Talma as being one of the only female magicians who was a manipulator and handy with coins and cards, you know, from way back in the 1800s.
Right.
But you were then blazing a trail doing trade shows, which I thought was... You must have been the first female doing trade shows.
You know, I think that my anatomy is probably not that much of what the award had to do with. I think that has something to do with my uniqueness, but I think it has more to do with the work that I do applying magic to practical solutions. I think you know I run Cause to Wonder, basically a trade show in the jungle. My time in trade shows taught me how to gather a crowd and impart a message about a product. And now I work in tribal cultures in rural places where it's usually illiterate and there's usually no media to speak of. And most of the time the word wife is a substitute for what we would consider a slave. They don't choose who they marry. They don't choose what they do. And while they are proud to be obedient wives, as I was proud to be an obedient daughter, the dynamic is a complete patriarchy, and women have no human rights, so it crosses over. And there's certainly plenty of domestic violence in our culture, but the idea, like I just came from India, and I did like 300 shows, and I printed stickers that said, my magic word was, if you want good luck, don't beat or kill women. And I leave behind stickers. Usually it's helping women brings good luck or helping women brings good things, depending on the nuance of the culture. But when I got there, I was trying to learn to say that in Punjab, and my interpreter said, "But Lisa, you don't understand. It's ordinary here to hit women." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, it's normal here to hit a woman." And I said, "Well, why would you hit a woman? For example, when?" And he said, "Well, if she talks too loud."
Oh, gosh. Oh,
so, gosh. Well, and he meant it. So okay. I tightened up the magic word. I made it stronger, which is instead of helping women bring us good things, if you want good luck, so it was personal, don't beat or kill women. Because it's very common. It's a reaction in the same way that people used to spank their child.
Is it they treat each other? In other words, men will treat men that way or only women that way?
I don't know. It's a pretty nonviolent culture outside the home as far as I can tell.
Okay.
They certainly aren't a eating culture. But
they beat their children
In the same way, I don't know. I don't think so. I think adult dynamic is different than child dynamic. But in the same way we used to get spanked or your papa had a switch, discipline and control was maintained with violence, and people saw it as no other choice. You can't tell somebody not to hit their dog. You can't tell somebody not to hit their kid. Now you can in this culture and how far it goes. But here's the interesting thing. Those families are really connected, and those women are really proud to be good, obedient wives, in spite of the fact that they might fear their husband on whatever level. And I don't know which people I met were violent or not violent, because many women, in sophisticated groups, I would do magic, and I'd have a man repeat the words, "If I want good luck, I won't beat or kill women." And then they'd leave, and their wives. I met a man who was a PhD, and actually they live sometimes in the West. And the man left the room, and the wife said, "He says that to you, but he'll still go home and hit me."
Wow.
So you can't really change the men. But if you introduce a household expression or a superstition to a boy, he'll look around and find it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
"Look, my uncle hits his wife and he has a lousy life. My father doesn't." Or, "I notice that every time I'm good to the women in my world, good things happen to me."
Right.
Right? So that people look for proof of things. There's an expression in the world that I won't repeat, but that it equates beatings with love.
Hmm.
And it's a very common expression in Mexico and in Africa and in Russia.
A beating with love?
No, I'm not going to say the phrase because I don't want to give the phrase any energy. I'm going to say, but my words, "Helping women brings good things," is an attempt to counteract that and to send it out with a novelty. Because in the places that I go, they haven't seen television. They haven't seen magic as an art form. And while they find it an amusing, clown-like experience, everybody leaves with waving their fingers over a rock saying, "Helping women brings good luck," or "If we let the girls go to school, the village will be lucky." So I think that the work that I do there is maybe more significant of a reason why they chose to recognize me as an influential woman in magic.
In magic in particular, that's good. Because I was thinking rule of thumb, was based upon the size of a switch that you
would
use.
We don't need to repeat that.
That was not what you were thinking.
No, well, I know it, but I don't want to put that out.
But you didn't give energy to that.
We don't need to give energy to that. Yeah, no, certainly. Violence is within all of us, and we all get angry. But if it becomes a tool or mechanism to achieve what you want, well, war is murder. It's another kind of violence.
Yes.
We can say that we justify it, but I'm not sure that just because somebody says go kill, you can.
How did you make that changeover, I guess, or when did you recognize this? I mean, in your travels you saw this? I mean, at some point in your life, at least you had to have had an experience or something. If it's a personal thing, you don't have to share, but I was thinking that, you're leading your life and doing magic, and then there was something. It was kind of like, I see injustice in the world, and I want to try to correct that. There wasn't like a life-changing moment.
Money.
You're financially able to do it. Yeah.
Right. I retired from trade shows, or I was able to retire. I bought a mall.
And, a mall? Shopping
I bought a
mall?
I bought a shopping mall and for a while ago.
You were successful doing trade shows.
Well, and everybody else was buying houses and cars, and I was just saving my pennies because I knew that I wanted to retire young and have a second life. And the second life I planned didn't work out. So then I thought, I'll have to do something. And I had made some magic in a Sri Lankan village on a university trip. And this crowd gathered around and they loved me. Oh my God, they loved me. And it was at that time where I was just trying to decide if I wanted to be a magician or not, and if I had what it took, that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this audience loved me. And they were, I was like, oh my God, they love me. I've matured. Something has changed. I've got the presence.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it. I'm going to be so great. And I'm in this little fishing village in the middle of nowhere thinking, I'm going to be a star.
Believing your own press.
Well, they loved me, right? You should have seen their gogs. And then this woman pushes through the crowd, and she hands me this heavy bundle of dirty rags, and she starts kissing. She drops down, and she starts kissing my ankles. And I'm thinking, oh, this is weird. And she's pleading with me with her eyes, and she's my age. We're both about 20. And then I open the bundle of rags, and inside is her deformed baby.
Oh, my God.
And I was really embarrassed and ashamed, because fast forward on a movie, it all came pounding in that those people didn't think I was the most amazing thing. They'd never seen magic, and they didn't know it was an art form. They thought it was a supernatural experience. So anyway, I left the village totally ashamed. I thought to myself, I've committed a sin. And I was a very good girl. I'd never intentionally done anything wrong. But this, I thought, oh my God, what have I done? And I was so ashamed. So I snuck out of the village. And then later I told the story because I wanted to talk about how I'd been in Sri Lanka and met a ventriloquist, and people thought that the doll was possessed because they'd never heard of ventriloquism, and how the same applied to magic. You know, supernatural is part of their ordinary life. And I'd tell the story, and people would be so depressed at the end of that story that I'd add, but I told the village that the baby was lucky, and they would find out when it turned 35 years old so that they would take care of the baby.
Until maturity.
But that was a total lie.
Yeah.
It was just a finish line of the story so people weren't totally depressed with the moment. So if I told that story, I added it. And then when I retired, I thought, you know what? Maybe I can do that. Maybe I can. Because, you know, all the stories that we have in our history that we can document at the Museum of Storytelling, which is a wonderful place to go in Oxford, anything that's more than 4,000 years old, and I think we have about 254, I think is the number, of stories that remain that we know the plot to, and they all contain a supernatural element. So impossible or cognitive dissonance causes the spread of information. And so I knew I wanted to use that. And you know, every religion starts with a miracle to authenticate the magic teller.
So I tell you what, we just took a break for a minute there, and let's go in a different direction. And because I had to change out the batteries on the microphone here. So about the convention, have you been to the Genie Convention before? Or isn't your first one?
This is my first Genie Convention.
Me too, as well. So
yeah.
How are you enjoying this?
I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
It's the room is magical. It's a well set room. You can see everything very well. The camaraderie is of a higher level. Mm. There are very few amateurs that are beginners. There's a lot of professionals, and there are a lot of hardcore, lifelong devotees of magic that are... I've seen people here I haven't seen in 20 years. I mean, Paul Harris is here.
Mm-hmm.
So
Kostya Kimlet and Michael Amar. There are several people, of course, who live in the Florida area that just kind of showed up, you know, that are not performing here nor lecturing.
No, right. But there's lots of people dropping in who aren't paid to be here and who are taking time with individuals on subtleties. And like this session we just sat through, basic training, was great.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening on all levels.
Were there some highlights or something that you've seen or lecture-wise or... You kind of sit through most of the things, too.
There's
been a good variety, you know.
There's been a good variety.
From Jim Steinmeier talking about Morris.
You know, always the highlights of conventions are moments that I say, God, I wish I could steal that. And there's been a lot of great work. There's been a lot of great innovation.
And there was something last night that Piff had said. He said, there's a line right here I'd normally use, but I know all of you guys would steal it.
Right. And if you perform at a convention, you're aware
that
people can't help it, right? They copy, and they don't even know it, right? They'll copy your style. They'll copy your bit. They'll think, oh, well, I remember doing a trick, and somebody I knew pretty well copied it. And I said, well, why'd you do that? Why, that's my best bit. And they said, well, but yours is green. Mine is yellow.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I think I liked Alexandra Devivier. I liked Hector. I liked Lucy Darling. I liked Raymond Crowe. I liked them all. It's a great convention. You know, Genie is... Genie's the real deal. There's all kinds of publications, but Genie's the real deal. It offers you variety, it offers you history, it offers you professional advice, and there's not a better reference than you can have than a stack of Genie magazines. You know, you subscribe to Genie for 2 years, and you have all the information you need to be a working pro.
Yep. Good advice. Good advice. Well, listen, we're missing a lecture. We need to go catch David Kay.
Let's
the rest
do
of what's
it.
Going on. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was my buddy Lisa Mena. Scotty out.
Bye.
All right, Scott Wells again here for the Magic Word Podcast. And so that we just saw David Kay, Silly Billy's lecture, and we're running a little bit late after we were talking, Lisa and I. And so I'm here with Katrina. I can't pronounce it. Crutch,
like if you break your leg and you get a crutch.
Get a crutch. Okay, perfect. Let me first of all say that I enjoyed your performance at the IBM convention this year. Wasn't that right? Weren't you competing in the
close-up contest?
Close-up contest.
Oh, thank you. Yes,
I was
a
judge.
So much.
You might remember we talked about that afterwards. I was saying I thought you did a great job. Sorry you didn't get first, but there were a lot of there were good competitors there, but did a great job. And thanks for joining us for martinis the other night too. So I'm glad.
Oh, thank you.
Kind of getting caught up here and everything. Anyhow, so we were talking about the convention, and this is your first Genie convention, or have you been to others?
It's my first Genie convention,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how are you enjoying it? What's been a highlight?
Oh, I love it. I like that it's kind of big, sort of like Magic Live, but a little bit more intimate, because I think it's a smaller hotel. You can hang out with a lot more of your heroes and people that inspire you. I got to meet David Kay a few days ago, uh-huh. And got him to sign my book.
You said you were on the third time you're reading this. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to revamp my children's show and
sign
a new one.
You got a very good children's show. You know, you provide a show like a princess or something. Is it have a princess party or something? Or?
I started being a princess at children's party. That was my gateway drug to magic, was doing princess magic shows.
Yeah.
But now I like to inspire children to learn magic. I have these little magic kits I sell. And I often get booked for little girl children's parties, sometimes boy parties, because there aren't that many female children's magicians in L.A. And so I always am like, hey, do you want to have this add-on? It's a magic kit, and I'll teach them, and mm-hmm. then they get to do magic in the show. And so I just usually teach, like, ball and vase and stuff like that. Yeah. But it's really cool seeing the little girls, like, get up and do the magic in front of all their friends.
Empowering the younger ladies.
You know, some of them are a little shy, and I have to, tell them a script, like, this is an ordinary vase. And some of them just go crazy and create their own script and are little divas, and it's adorable to watch them be empowered.
Well, you're learning as you're going, I'm sure. You're getting a lot more experience with that then, too. And so last evening you were in part of the Piff and Pop show. So I had to talk about that. I wanted to address that. What was that like? First of all, were you raising your hand to ask a question or to actually volunteer to urinate, or what was?
Oh gosh. I remember there was a dead silence for like 3 minutes.
It was like nobody was raising their hand.
My friend timed it. He said it was 3.5 minutes, and so I was asking on stage or off, because I want to know what I'm getting into.
Well, yeah. Explain what they had asked the audience.
They asked if someone would come on stage and pee in a cup, and then they were going to transform, like move the cup. Or no, not move it.
It was spectators' urine to an impossible location.
Yes, yeah. and so I raised my hand to clarify, on stage in front of everyone, or like on the side of the stage, because there's a lot of shows where they'll take a volunteer and take them off the stage.
Say,
like
sure.
I think Mysterio Cirque du Soleil show, they mm-hmm. do that. There's a few shows where they're like, hey, come on up, you're going to be part of the show, and then they take them off and they bring them back later.
And they're dressed differently or something.
Or they're holding a cup of pee.
Yeah.
So I asked that to clarify, and they kind of were just like, well, it's not for you anyway, because we don't have a cup and
or a funnel.
or a funnel. So I was a little unclear on what I was being asked to do till I got up. But once I got up there, they were very nice. I trust them, So, when they get on stage, both of them, Piff and Penn, they're pros,
Professional.
Totally professional. They were so kind. So, I was a little nervous. I was like, what's going to happen? But they really took care of me and were total gentlemen. And I got to meet them backstage, mm-hmm. and they were just so nice.
But there's nothing prearranged or anything. I mean, you really were a volunteer from the audience.
Yes, I was.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
And so how was the experience for you?
It was exciting.
What have people have said since then?
I hope I'm not known as the girl that peed in a cup on command. But a lot of people have been coming up and, like, fist bumping me and high-fiving me, I think because I fist bumped them both on stage.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I posted on your Facebook saying you rock. I thought it was great.
Oh, thank you. No, it was really exciting. I mean, they were both really respectful and awesome, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it was really fun. It was cool to see magic from that side of the stage with two professionals.
Behind a curtain.
Oh, yeah, behind a curtain.
So it was a good experience. That's good.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm glad to clarify
that.
Yeah, because, again, people had asked, you know, and I thought, well, I want to clarify this in the podcast, make sure, you know, that you were cool with it and didn't feel embarrassed. I mean, you were just all part of it and went with the flow. No, I agree.
Oh, no, it's art.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's art.
Art.
Yeah.
Art's weird sometimes.
It's a transitional thing, you know, transitory thing as well. So that sounds fantastic. Anything you're looking forward to today for the convention? Hoping to see or watch or learn or buy at the dealer's show in the room before they close?
Oh, well, I'm really excited. I pulled Lisa's leg to go get lunch with her. I'm doing a trip to Africa in January with Magicians Without Borders.
Sure, well, good for you.
And, yeah, I'm excited. And yeah. So, and she was like, oh, my gosh, I have all these tips I want to talk to you.
Be sure you take a notepad with you so you don't forget.
Yes,
or
yeah.
a microphone or something, you know, record on your telephone.
Can I borrow
or something.
Yours?
Yeah. I'm going to be using it, but I know you're serious. But no, be sure to take notes.
Yeah.
I got a notepad if you don't have one.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
I will.
I'll give you that because she will give me a lot of ideas. I mean, she has a lot of experience and everything then, too. So, good. Good luck with that. Thanks for doing that for Magicians Without Borders. And thanks for the fun that you provided us last evening then, too.
I mean, I don't know. I think if I hadn't gone up, it might not have happened.
It looks like that's true. Yeah. All right. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Katrina Kretsch. Scotty out. All right, well, now we are about to begin the afternoon close-up show now that lunch is over, and we're going to be seeing Max Maven introduce a few people for the close-up show. Got to say close-up, actually, it's a close-up for 700 people, but they have huge image magnifiers so everybody can see. And speaking of image magnifiers, whenever that someone is speaking, typically that you have to have something like this, and so that's why I'm here with a guy who is a professional speaker and my good friend and yours, Shep Hyken. Hey, Shep.
Hey, man. Great to be here. Great to see you again.
Again, my friend. I'm always glad to spend time with you. So, is this your first Genie convention?
This is my first Genie convention.
I liking it so far.
I am loving it. It's a little different in a good way, not a bad way. It's I think what makes it different is that everybody sees everything at the same time. I go to Magic Live every single year, and they split us up into two groups, and then there's multiple sessions to choose from, and you move around, which is actually like a typical conference that you would go to.
Right.
This is, to me, like it's a bigger convention, but like a small convention.
Yeah.
Does that sound like an oxymoron?
Nope.
But what I mean by that, it's got that small feeling that everybody's together, but it's just scaled out for more numbers.
I know exactly what you're saying, and I don't know how else to put that other than people that I normally, at let's say Magic Live, and you got 1,600 people, or at FISM, or Blackpool, or someplace,
right.
You may not either, A, ever see.
You may never see.
Yeah.
You know, I showed up with my wife to FISM in Sweden, and I told her I'd let's go hang out, and that was the first day. And I finally saw her again when it was time to go home at the airport. I said, I'm glad you found your way here. No, I'm just kidding. but seriously, this is, you know, kind of intimate.
It is. You see people more than once. You see them two or three times that you're kind of passing, you know, we're all in the same event.
Right. You've been in the Midwest Magic Jubilee many times.
Many times.
Right?
I performed there.
And really, that's what this reminds me of, just bigger. Kind of reminds me of the old Midwest Magic Jubilees that had 500-600 people or more on it.
Right. But also the fact that a lot of the talent here is top-notch. I mean, these are the guys that typically at a convention, they can only afford two or three of them, and they've got like dozens. I mean, you know, Gate and Bloom, and I'm gonna leave somebody out. But you get the point. There's a lot. And then people who are just hanging out, you know, like Coach Jukima, like Michael Amar, you know, and Paul Harris, and other people just showing up, just hanging out.
Yep. You got a lot of that. So I think the talent at this convention, and I hear this year after year, it's very good. And I'm experiencing what everybody says. The talent has been amazing. The shows have been great. You know, last night was an interesting night. It went a little bit long, but I'm kind of glad the way they did it is that Pat Hazel, who I've known since I was probably about 14 or 15 years old, he did a straight-up comedy show.
Yes.
Straight up. And, okay, that's great. And rather than just go into the next acts, let's take a break. So that had another 15, 20 minutes in there. But that's all right. I liked it. Then Pat came back, and he did his magic.
Yes.
And, wow, what a treat to see Pat Hazel do what he is really, I mean, what he's making a true living at now, which is his comedy and all the writing.
Yeah, because, you know, he'd been, I did a podcast with him, and I said, well, you've been out of magic for a while. I said, let me correct you. I've not been out of magic. I've been in magic. I just haven't been around magicians.
Right, right.
You know, while he's been doing these comedy writing and comedy shows and producing other people's shows and whatnot. So the point is that it was great, yeah, to see what he has been doing in his real life, you know, as a producer and as a comedian, and then B, to separate that, I guess, so this way you see him still doing magic. So, you know,
yeah,
that part,
it's kind of like people say to me, you still do magic? I never stop
there
doing
you go.
That. I
yeah.
buy more magic books than the average person who does magic all the time. And, you know, the only thing is, and I probably perform for money magic more than anyone, or not more than anyone, more than most, simply because...
Hey, Steve.
How are you,
good.
Mighty?
Good.
Look at this,
you're
my
Steve
buddy,
Bedwell,
another
right there.
Professional speaker,
See?
Magic dude.
Just hanging out here.
So, but no, to your point, you know, I do magic in my speech. So
yeah.
In a sense, I'm still professionally performing all of the time. Speaking of magic, we got a show starting here, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, Richard Kaufman's about to shush us.
To be continued.
Jeff Eichen, Scotty Young. All right, well, we just finished the afternoon close-up show. That was the second of 2 days, hosted by Max Maven. And I'm here with almost a professional reviewer of these kinds of things, Craig Mitchell, who, by the way, did a great job with IMX several years ago. That was one of
seems
the better
like
conventions.
It seems like an eternity ago.
How long was that, 10 years ago?
Just about.
Okay.
We all get an old.
Indeed, that was a fun convention, and I know that was a lot of effort and work for you then as well.
Indeed it was.
And you tried to put together some other kinds of things, or you have put together things in South Africa.
We have put some
then.
Other things together, yeah. And we've got the retreat coming up with Josh Jay and Andy Gladwin in
I was going to ask about
next
that a little
year,
bit.
2020.
And that's limited to like 30 people or something?
35, if I'm not mistaken, and just about all sold out. I think there's two spots remaining, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Guy Hollingworth and a whole bunch of other special guests.
Very intimate. And is that going to be one of these safari kind of things too?
On safari, game drive in the morning. Lecture in the afternoon and go follow the animals again in the evening.
Yeah.
It's going to be something very special.
And how will people get, if they want to get, sign up to take those last couple of slots, who can they get hold of you or how can
Vanishing
they?
Inc.
Oh, Vanishing Inc.
It's Josh Jay and Andy Gladwin's baby, and I'm helping on the ground on the South African leg.
And the dates are what again?
You're going to have to check. I'm afraid it's a blur at this stage. It's a complete blur. We've had Magic 24/7.
We have.
May 2020.
Okay, well, very good. You kind of pulled that out, okay?
We found the anchor.
Yes, this has been a blur, and I've not gotten much sleep. This is one of those conventions in which I have not gotten but 4 hours sleep a night.
Well, you're doing better than me.
That's why you look so pale right now, I guess. It's
clearly.
The blood's draining from your face.
Well, it's either that or the adventure theme park rides, one of the two.
Did you come early and got to leave late so you can actually go to the Harry Potter's?
We will spend a few days after the convention, but of recovery.
Okay, try to get some sleep before you go back.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, this convention, how have you enjoyed it? What's
been
highlights, lowlights, what have been going on?
Richard's put enormous amount of work into it,
so that's
been fun.
Yep.
What are the highlights? Eric Jones just did a great set.
Yes.
That was enjoyable. Paul Vierhul show, he had some fantastic touches. Lowlights, probably the show we've just come out of. Unfortunately, the dear Anna de Guzman is a big question mark as to how she possibly made it onto today's bill.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to say she was not very polished and seemed to be out of her depth. So question mark as to what Richard was thinking when he put her on the bill. But I suppose each to their own.
Yeah.
But overall, it's been a great show, a great convention with lots of interesting little snippets. The Penn & Teller lecture was, or Q&A.
Right.
It was great to see them in action. And I didn't realize that Teller is 71, which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, he's older than I thought he was. He looks younger than me.
Well, he looks fantastic for his age. And the question which I didn't get to ask them is, what does retirement look like for Penn & Teller?
Good question.
How do they see themselves riding off into the sunset, if at all, or are they going to be the perennial stars and just continue performing until the day they drop down dead? Because they seem to have more energy now than ever before.
You know, I wondered about that with Siegfried and Roy, because it seems like that they were at the top of the game whenever that
They just signed, I think it was a 5-year extension.
Oh, is that right?
Just
and they were in their 60s at the time, I
late,
think?
Late 60s, and they just signed another 5-year extension just prior to the accident happening. So...
Yeah.
who knows what's going to happen with Penn & Teller. I mean, they've got another season of Fool House. There's a rumor that they are going to be leaving the Rio Hotel and moving on to a strip property. So they seem to be continuing full steam ahead.
Yeah, well, and as well, hopefully, that they will. Speaking of which, that what I saw on the Genie forums, some other places, that on Facebook, a little bit of controversy about last evening's show, you know, with Piff and Pops, with Piff and Penn as his father dragon, with the fallen spectators urine to unknown location.
Definitely a unique element, and I think probably perfectly crafted to add some controversy and have everyone talking about it. But Piff's done exceptionally well after his AGT appearance and continuing to go full steam ahead there as well. So Richard's managed to get a very eclectic mix of performers all around. I mean, a major scoop to get Penn & Teller. Obviously, he's got Piff here as well, and he's got some incredible people.
I thought that was, you're right, it seems like all the people who have been like on the cover of the magazine or something, you know.
Take two.
Because, yeah, all the people seem to be just on the cover of the magazine that are all just A-list magicians, if you will.
And I got to see somebody new. I have always heard about Nick DeFatti.
You haven't seen Nick DeFatti before, yeah.
Never seen him before. Mm-hmm. Got to see him live. Obviously seen his stuff on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So that was great. Lucy Darling, I've also only heard about. So Richard's managed to get these little undiscovered gems as well, along with all the big headliners.
You talk about Ana de Guzman, that she had mentioned about how, or maybe Max did or something, that he had booked her before she had been on Penn & Teller.
Well, I didn't realize that she'd been on Penn & Teller, but she started with a weird cardistry section, and it's like, well, is this supposed to be entertaining for the audience? Because I've never seen cardistry done live on stage before. You know, it's normally stuck on YouTube and a computer screen. And it's like, well, is this supposed to be a juggling act? And then I'm sorry, just...
Didn't do it for you.
Didn't do it for me at all, and then the magic was weak. She looked terrified on stage, to be brutally honest.
Well, she was probably so. Mm-hmm. You know, it was probably her first time in this environment among, you know, these magicians.
Oh, I mean, it's the Shark Tank, make no mistake. Well, you've got 700 performers, and you need to come up with your A game, and everyone's wanting to be wild. And it was great to see Gayton Bloom ended the show with this high-energy, super polished number. And probably the highlight for the convention for me thus far was probably Terry Ward, who was a replacement for one of the other performers, and... He's the resident magician at Disney World, and 35,000 performances later, and you just see the polish there, and
absolutely,
you name it, he's had it, and it shows. Great joy to watch.
Yeah. I was a little bit disappointed, actually, I guess, with John Lovick. You know, maybe it was a bad angle, you know, some things that I saw or shouldn't have seen. Maybe it was the camera angle or whatever.
He flashed his bottle opening, and it was also probably a weak performance from him. I've seen him perform better.
Yeah.
But I suppose everyone has a good day, and everyone has a bad day, and... Such is the nature of live entertainment.
That's exactly right. Well, and that may have been the thing, you know, in Anna's defense, that perhaps it just might have been a bad day for her. So,
maybe.
Although that was the structure of her show. She had planned on doing those kinds of things, you know, with the Rubik's Cube and other things, you know, too. So.
And the other interesting choice, which seems a bit dated, unfortunately, was Jonathan Neal on the...
Really? Because I loved him.
It was like, I felt like I was stuck in the 80s.
It was the 80s, 1980s, or the 70s, with the music and everything.
And I don't know whether this is a recurring theme. We had Pat Hazel, and if you weren't American, it was like, am I watching an ode to Americana over there? Well, 60 minutes of...
Because it killed me. I loved it. But then again, I hadn't thought about that, you know, being in South Africa.
Well, first of all, it wasn't magic, number one. So it was a 45...
It was a comedy routine.
It was a 45-minute comedy routine, and maybe I should have been told about that ahead of time. I would have skipped that.
Yeah.
And it was... Ode to Americana, which, if you aren't American, unfortunately not going to do anything for you.
And there are a lot of non-Americans here. That's true.
Richard's got a large percentage of non-Americans attending. Yeah. So again, maybe plays to the home audience.
Yeah. And
the older audience who harken back to their childhood.
Yeah.
And I think it was Alexandre Duvivier who did the stereotypical Ode to America, where anytime somebody brings out a U.S. flag, the crowd jumps to their feet, forgets about what they performed or what they didn't perform, and suddenly think that the act was wonderful just by virtue of the fact that they had a U.S. flag on stage. Really, the audience needs to get above that. Suddenly the U.S. flag comes out and everyone forgets that the actual performance...
I don't think that's endemic just to the Americans. I think that, I don't care if you're in Brazil or wherever, you know, if they pull out a flag, the people are going to stand and salute it. You don't believe that?
Definitely not. There's a wonderful patriotism that Americans have, and that suddenly... Maybe right. It blinds them to everything that they've seen before. Yeah. So the actual act could be terrible, but you bring out a flag, it's fantastic, and there's an automatic guaranteed standing ovation. So,
and that's a lot of times the way those flags are sold, you know, saying, here's your way of getting an automatic standing ovation.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, I got to see Darren Romeo in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee a couple of years ago, and that's homeland, heartland America. And I kid you not, the banners come down, the U.S. flag goes up, the national anthem play, and it's guaranteed. I mean, it's remarkably crafted.
Yeah. So you're un-American if you don't stand up.
Oh, and they look at you as if you're completely crazy.
Where are you from? You're not around
exactly.
these parts, are you?
So it's great to see, but it's just, well, when you've seen a substandard magic act, it's like, guys, you can't forget what you've seen, and you can't get too excited just because the person's got a U.S. flag embroidered on their jacket. Don't get too carried away by the patriotic fervor.
Now, tonight, we're almost finished here. This is wrapping up for the final this evening.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Nick DeFat and Lucy Darling. They're co-hosting, so it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with. Lucy Darling, I'm told, was supposed to be with Rob Zabrecki, and for some reason Rob wasn't able to make the event. So it's going to be interesting to see what they've come up
with. They're dynamic, yeah.
I haven't seen David Kovac before, so he's new for me. And there's Jay Johnson as well, so that's also a new performer. What is interesting for this convention, Richard hasn't given a program in terms of a bio as to who the performers are.
It's online, I think, though.
Maybe, otherwise you have to Google the performers to see who's who who's who in the zoo. So that's something different over there. Next time, Richard, please, a one-page bio so we can see what everyone's claimed to fame is.
That's a good point, that all we have really is just something that looks like it was printed last night, you know, to stick in your folder.
Well, it gives us the schedule, which is great, and everyone wants to know, well, when the next Genie event's going to be taking place.
Yes, well, and that was another thing that he was asking, just kind of to get a poll, basically, should I be having this again in 2 years and compete with FISM, or would you come after going to Quebec?
Ah, that's a good question. I think Rich would be very foolish to try and compete with FISM, especially seeing that it's in Canada. So it's on the North America's home turf territory. But I sincerely hope it takes place again. Maybe just the timing needs to be just slightly away from FISM. Because
that's going to be in August, right, in 21. And so this would then, if he has it again in October, it's just a couple months away. So you're saying it should be further apart.
I think ideally. I think everyone's going to be very magicked out after 7 days of FISM. But maybe there's some diehards there because Stan will no doubt do Magic Live, so in which case you'll be able to hop from Magic Live to FISM and then a short break. There'll be Richard's potential GenieCon 2021, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Right. That's a good point. Well, Craig, appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Scott. Always good hearing.
Looking forward to the final gala show.
Yes, indeed. Should be good. And so with the Magic Word podcast, that was Craig Mitchell. Scotty out. All right, well, we just finished with the Duvivier show, and that was with Alexandra and her dad. What's his dad's name? I got David Kay with me. Hey, David.
Dominique.
Duvivier. That's right, Duvivier. That's right. Very good show. I thought it was going to be a lecture, but actually it was just a two-person
show. They're lecturing tonight after the gala show.
Oh, they are? Okay,
yes.
So that's going to be coming. Okay,
yeah,
good. Gotcha. And then next we're going to be having Ben Seidman.
Yes.
And I like Ben.
I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Have you not seen his show before?
Well, you know, he was at Magic Live.
Magic Live.
And he had some trouble. Some people had some trouble with him. And so I'm looking forward to seeing him do his work.
Yeah,
his
show. He'd worked with been a consultant for Chris Angel for a while.
Yeah,
and was on the college circuit and did some good stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing him then as well. So you did a good job, by the way. I know you can't talk much about yourself, but I didn't hear the whole thing because I... not planning on doing a lot of stuff with kids shows.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. But from what I saw, of course, as always, you killed it. Hope you did well in sales.
I was very happy with the lecture and happy with sales.
Good.
I thought I had the great tech crew handled my videos beautifully. And the people, it was early in the morning, it was at 9:15, but the people who were there definitely wanted to be there, and you know they woke up early to see the.
Well, I went to
lecture.
Ian Kendall's workshop.
Oh my goodness, that's early.
It was each day. I think it got progressively earlier or something.
It felt earlier. That's what it was.
Well, I thought it was 8:30 this morning, and actually I thought, well, I'm going to get there early, and it was 8:15 is when I began for some reason. It was according to the schedule too, but anyhow. So then afterwards, I was talking with Lisa Mena, and by the time I got in here, so I just caught the last part.
Oh, okay. I'll blame Lisa then.
Yeah, no, Lisa was saying, we got to go see David, so we got to support him. And I said, I agree. So let's get going. We'll see part of it.
Well, thank you.
So anyhow, what's been some highlights for you for the convention?
Actually, the first show was, I thought, my favorite, the best thing here, with Lucy Darling, Raymond Crowe, and
Hector Mancha.
And Hector Mancha. You probably talked about it already on the podcast.
But, a little bit, but I want to hear your take.
But they instead of doing 30 minutes a piece in succession, they did pieces, ABC, ABC, ABC. I thought it was fantastic. Two standing ovations, one for Hector Mancha's Vizimac,
yeah,
and one for Raymond Crowe's Shadows, of course, which always gets a standing ovation. It's always fantastic.
Because he toured with The Illusionist doing his
Shadow
Act, too.
Yeah, well, he's been doing that for a long time.
But I like his floating jacket then also, which
the
is
jacket
really
cool. was great. I had seen it several years ago, and my memory is that it was just him on stage with a jacket, and this time he brought a spectator on stage, borrowed the jacket, gave it back after you know, manipulating it and floating it. That's my memory of it. Anyway, it was fantastic. Yeah, that was great.
Wasn't he the one who did that snooker act also? Seemed like he did some billiard ball routine or something. I remember seeing on
You mean
YouTube.
Here at the...
Not here.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I thought that was Raymond Crowe that had done it. Maybe confusing him with somebody else.
I haven't seen that.
But I thought that he had done some... Okay, well, never mind.
But he was great. And, you know, he did... I was really happy. He did a lot of sort of deep cuts. He did a salt pour act, which I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
He started with a different shadow act, a short 5-minute piece where he's...
The silhouettes. Yeah, they cut out
with his costume, with his hat, with the top hat. And that I'd never seen that before. So we got to see not only his best stuff. Oh, he also did the silhouette cutting.
With a couple.
Yes, with the couple.
That was real lovely.
So he did like 4 or 5 pieces, and other than the closing hand shadows, they were all new to me. So they were fantastic.
Right. Anything from the lectures that you got, or he might do, or. I mean, I thought they were all varied. I mean, you know, it's just as varied as the magazine itself. You know, as Jeannie has a lot of things. I mean, where they had, you know, Hannibal was performing, was great yesterday, one-man show. And, of course, then what I'm thinking about is when Jim Steinmeier, you know, was giving these kinds of
Jim's
history.
Jim was fantastic.
On Moritz.
He's always great. He's a great speaker, and he always makes these things very interesting. You know, sort of history. Some people think history is dry, but he makes them fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it was a great story. I thought it was fantastic. That was one of my favorite lectures, actually.
Yeah. But my point being is how that this is so varied,
you
know, one from the other.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Sarah Crossan had talked about intellectual property and all that. I mean, it's not just magic, but other stuff that is of interest, you know, history and whatnot.
Yeah, it was lots of stuff, lots of different things. Yeah, great.
And have you attended
lots
this
of
one
man shows.
Hmm? You've attended the Jeannie convention in the past?
I did two of the 3 previous ones.
Is this similar to those in some ways? Or?
Yeah, well, Richard likes to think of it as a close-up convention.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to focus more on close-up, which he does, and he did. Yes, I thought it was very similar to the others. I think the most amazing... The most amazing thing that happens at Jeannie is that Richard introduces every lecture and every show.
He's the MC, generally.
Yeah, he's the MC, but he not only is he there introducing, but he sits and watches. He's one of the few producers of conventions who gets to enjoy
his
own convention, because that's rare.
That's very true.
And I mentioned it to him, and he says, you know, it's really important to him that he wants to do that. And he's right, of course. He works hard putting it together and gets to enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, whenever I was president of the TAOM and organized that and was kind of doing all the things, I mean, behind the scenes,
of course.
I never saw anything.
No.
That's interesting. Well, it did, now that you mentioned it, it does have kind of that home feel to it from the standpoint that, you know, he's saying, here are my friends, and let's enjoy something as if they were in his house.
Exactly. And when he introduces the lectures and the acts, you can see he's really eager to share,
and he wants to see it.
He wants to see it, but he wants us to see it. Yeah. He can't wait for us to see.
Yeah, so
like
this
he
guy
gets
really
all excited.
Fooled me, right, you know, and I want him to fool you too.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So he's got this, you know, this great sort of youthful enthusiasm about the acts.
Did you get a chance to do the 49 boxes?
I did the 49 boxes at Magic Live. Yeah, so
similar
I didn't
kind
do
of
it.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't do it this time.
I did, and as I was saying on the podcast earlier, I got. Apparently the same boxes I had before. I mean, of all the boxes.
Oh, my God. There's 49 of them, Scott.
I know. And I sat at a table with some friends. They said, hey, let's get together. And so I said, okay, I followed them. They sat down, and As soon as we got into it, it's like, this looks familiar.
Well, you must have been perceived as a genius. You solved the puzzle right away.
I hope they're not listening, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, terrific.
So that was a lot of fun. Anyhow, yeah, the overall convention's been really great.
Convention's been
fun,
great.
Yeah.
It's been so much fun, and a lot of great people are here. It's not fair to compare it to Magic Live, but maybe that happens naturally because Magic Live is such a popular convention. But everyone's here.
That's true, but on a smaller scale.
It's more manageable.
I can run into you and other people on a more regular basis as opposed to saying, hey, I didn't know you were here on the last day.
That's right. Yeah, it's got a great feel. It's got a great, warm...
Nice vibe. I think also because everything is compact right here, we're not having to run across the hotel. I mean, we have this nice showroom here, and then we have another one upstairs where that we have some of the other activities in the dealer's room. Is adequate size. They seem to be doing good business.
He picked a great hotel. This really is a great hotel. The facilities are great. The rooms are great.
And they've upgraded from what I understand. Now, I've not been here in past years, but I talked with someone who said the hotel itself was not so great in the earlier years, but they have since, upgraded.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
No.
It's always been good.
But I love the mall.
The mall
is attached to the hotel.
You don't have to go outside in the humid weather.
No, I haven't. I haven't been outside in the humid weather. No, I haven't been outside in 3 days, as is typical for a Magic convention.
Yeah, it's like 90 degrees and almost 99% humidity here.
I haven't been outside. Tomorrow, I'm going to take the day off and go to one of the parks.
Right now, I'm looking at my watch. It's 90 degrees.
90 degrees. Now, well, so. but in here,
and
it's
here
freezing.
It is at 4 o'clock too.
Yeah, it's it's nice.
Well, you're wearing shorts. That's why.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, David, good talking to you.
Thanks very much, Scott. Always great. Congratulations on the podcast.
Why, thank you.
500 episodes. Now it's 506 probably.
No, this would be like the once this is coming out, this 524 episode.
What? Really?
Yeah. Because I've been doing forum here this week, so it's been going fast,
Goodness, that's amazing. Wow, it doesn't
stop.
When
I was out with you a couple weeks ago at Darren's show. Darren Brown's show. Yes. Whenever we had dinner there in New York.
That's right.
I don't know if it was dinner or breakfast at that time of the morning.
I don't remember.
Anyhow.
Okay.
As always,
good talking to you
as well. Take care. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that's my old friend David from back in the Dodd Vickers day. With the Magic Newswire, this is Scotty out. All right, well, we just finished the evening show for the final evening show, and it was a good one that was actually hosted by Nick DeFat and by Lucy Darling. And that was a lot of fun, and we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But the last thing that's kind of interesting, rather than ending on the gala show, we're actually going to be ending on Dominique Duvivier, who is going to be lecturing this evening. So that's coming up here shortly, but I thought I would introduce you to someone that's been on the podcast before, and it was actually one of my top 10 of the podcasts we've had. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Noel Britton. Hey, Noel.
Hi, Scott. How's it going?
Fantastic. And first of all, let me just congratulate you, as everyone else has been as well. I feel like this is the end of the convention, the first time I've really had a chance to talk to you. Congratulations on becoming the new incoming president of the Magic Circle.
Very kind of you. Thanks very much indeed. Yeah, just a month in now, so still the new boy at the moment.
Well, you had my vote. So.
Well, very, very kind of you. Yeah.
And so Scott Penrose served. Can you only serve a certain number of terms and then you give up? Or how's that
so,
work?
Yeah, the maximum is 5 years. Mm. Someone can stand against you at any time during it,
yes.
any one of the election time, so that's on a yearly basis, but mm-hmm. 5 years is the maximum, so that's been in for about 25-30 years now, I think, the 5-year term. Okay. So before that, Francis White, who was the president when I first joined, was about 31 or 32 years, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah,
that's when they decided we need to start limiting terms.
I've only doing it for a month, so I don't know how he did it for 31 32 years, that's for sure.
A lot of politics involved, I guess. You kind of knew what you were getting into. Certainly.
Yes, I mean, like any society, any club, there's an element of that, and there's mm-hmm. an element also of just wanting to do it for the magic side of it, but that's
right.
Sometimes overtaken by other bits and pieces. So, but looking forward to getting to the magic side.
I always like to ask people who are incoming presidents, like the SAM or IBM, whatever the organization is, about what their goals are, why that you wanted to achieve that as a president, aside from the... what I think would be obvious, that is, eternal notoriety. But, I mean, it's what do you want to accomplish? What's your future going to happen?
My main thing that I was standing for was I just want to try and get the building open a bit more to the public through shows and also opening during the day. That the main sort of thrust in the last few years has been corporate higher for the building, and I think that's, you know, with the economic climate, that's going to drop down a bit, and the mm-hmm. and the area's being developed at the moment, so there's a lot of building work around the area, which doesn't affect us.
Except for the road. I thought for a while, wasn't the road closed?
The road gets closed for sort of deliveries and stuff like that. You can still access it by foot and actually by, you know, vehicle most of the time. Okay. But it just makes it a bit more difficult to sell it to corporate bookers, because obviously you're you know, it doesn't look quite as attractive as it
right.
as it used to, or quite as accessible. So so that's my thing. And obviously my background is performing and the tourism side right. of performing, so that seems to gel well with what the Magic Circle could be. But that's, you know, you've got to talk the council into it, and you've got to talk the membership into it, and you've got to right. talk the foundation into it. So I mean, you know, there's I think there's a lot of positive feeling towards going into that direction, but it means a lot of work in actually setting that up in the first place.
But that's where the money will start to come from, because it's not going to be coming necessarily from the existing members or new members. It's going to have to be coming from outside sources.
No, not necessarily. I think certainly the corporate stuff is going to slow down.
It, yeah.
But in terms of membership, I mean, I think there's an awful lot of content and data that we've got from the Magic Circle, you know, having been around for 115 years,
right.
you know, content of the magazine.
Great library.
We've taped all the lectures for the last 25, 30 years.
The website continues to improve.
Absolutely. So the website's still getting all that stuff up. So I think in that sense, we can get more international members and out-of-town members. We stream the lectures now, so that's a lot more...
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's one of my favorite things. I really, really enjoy that, and I want to thank you for having that online, because I can watch that kind of on demand, I guess, you know, as a member through the closed group of the Magic Circle, because I've learned some stuff and added some stuff to my act that I would not have seen. Tom Peterson, for an example, was
sure.
one who had come through a few years ago. I was impressed by his lecture. I ended up booking him on a tour throughout the U.S., you know, and I was telling it. So I had to jump on everybody. I was doing one of his things with a little rubber ducky before anybody else in the States was doing it, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great resource, yeah. and they're up there, you know, in perpetuity, so they're
yeah.
you know, you can go back and look at them at any time, and
right.
I mean, it creates problems in that, you know, now we have some people who live nearby who won't attend,
right.
so you're losing them, so that we've got to deal with that, and there's plans in place to help with that, I think, and make stuff more interactive. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing that you can't recreate anywhere. I mean, it's the great thing about this convention.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the social side of hanging out with people, and you've got the sessioning side of actually people giving
right.
you hands-on sort of do this and do that. If you're just sitting and watching it nowadays, I think you can stream it, and you can show it on film it for DVDs or whatever, and that is, you know, that is a problem nowadays. It's like
right.
what is the purpose of a bunch of magicians actually getting together if they can have all this input from YouTube and forums
right.
and so on? So it is the social side. I think it is the actual hands-on teaching side. So we need to concentrate on that. But certainly the streaming side of it makes a huge difference to our out-of-town members and our international members, and the numbers are definitely growing in that respect. You know, and it's a great brand name, you know. In England, it's you know, it's still a big question that you get asked when you're a magician.
It's like cachet.
Yeah. You know, are you a member of the Magic Circle? And that might be less so around the world, but hopefully we can build that up. So.
And what do we have, like 1,500 worldwide members?
Yeah, it's about 1,500. So, yeah, it's about 900 in the Greater London area, slightly outside the Greater London area and England, and then, you know, less
overseas,
overseas
yep.
at the moment.
Right. And how is this going to affect then your two things? One is, I don't know whether you're still doing the tours in Bath, the ghost tours, still doing that?
Yes, yeah, so okay. Bizarre Bath, that's still running. That's our 30th year next year.
Okay.
So
just
yeah.
being Halloween month, I wanted to talk about that just a little bit.
Right, okay, yeah, yeah. So, well, yeah, it's a comedy walk, so it's not Halloween-based. We go still just after Halloween, just mm-hmm. Because that's school vacations in England, that last week of
right.
October for us, so it's a good week to finish on. So that runs for 7 months of the year, and there's been two of us doing it for the last... few years, me doing the bulk of the nights, but I've taken on a third guy, so that's going to free up a lot of time for.
And so people who are going to be going over to the UK, they need to go by Bath to take that tour, certainly. And how many nights a week are you going to be doing?
It runs 7 nights a week for 7 months of the year. So yeah, so it's always going. Yeah. I mean, if you particularly want to see me, then get in touch with me, and I can let you know which nights I'm doing. But the other guys are very well trained as well. So it's a show, so it is a script, but at the same time,
rain or shine. Yeah, because when I was doing, I think it was a light rain or something. But the other thing has to do then with the orangutans that you work with. You're still going to be, how is that going to be interfering? Because you're over there usually several months a year.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me and my wife about 10 years.
World Wildlife Force?
It's International Animal Rescue is the charity that we used to work with. So we actually stopped doing that maybe 3 years ago. My mother-in-law was ill, so we stayed here to look after her. Then she passed away, and by that stage they'd restructured the organisation over there. They were trying to get less Westerners working at the centre, which was always part of the long-term plan, because they wanted to get the local population involved, so that if anything did happen in terms of political unrest or whatever, that the centre would still run without the Westerners. So they stopped the volunteer program, and that's what my wife and I used to facilitate.
So you don't go over there as often then?
No, we don't go over there to work at all. We've been over a couple of times to visit and see friends over there,
but not to work to say the time you used to. Yeah.
No, and it was hard work, and I'm five years older than
rewarding.
I was when I went out there. So my knees are bad, and it was incredibly rewarding. But if you're not able to do everything that you want to do over there, sometimes you feel you're holding the others back.
It's just that whenever that people say, well, I want to get involved and listen to the podcast, what do you recommend? And there are a few podcasts I recommend, and this is one of them. They say, what is it about? And I will say, there's conversations, and I don't know what direction it's going to be going, because I had called you. I think we'd done a Skype call, and you said you were overseas, and I thought maybe you're on a cruise ship. Said, no, I'm here working at the orphan orangutans. What? And we went for a half hour in a completely different direction than I thought. It was one of the most fascinating conversation still that I've ever had on the podcast. I just love it. So people should go back and listen and look for that.
Well, it's very, very kind of you to say so. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a fascinating problem, and obviously conservation even more so now over the last few years has become a bigger thing.
Right.
It's quite depressing as well at the same time. That's the problem with it. And
that was the thing. We were talking about comedy then also, and you're saying it's getting harder. I've quoted this so many times. It's getting harder to find comedy in the world when you see depressing things like that and the way that people treat animals and poachers, etc.
Yeah, generally. And I think a lot of that is, the problem over there is deforestation, and that's because of palm oil and so on, and that's because, you need to fuel all these products being made, and capitalism and stuff. And sometimes it's difficult to stand in front of an audience and, if they're rowdy and drunken, which used to happen a lot in the comedy clubs I used to work, you would just get slightly annoyed with them, thinking you don't realise how good you've got it. And seeing how people live, Borneo's, there's three sections to it. There's a Malaysian side, Brunei, and the Indonesian side.
Right.
Indonesia's the least developed of the three. But, people are incredibly happy there with very little. And then you get back to the Western world and people are very unhappy with a lot of stuff, and you go, well, it's not getting all this stuff isn't that's not the solution, and Westerners think it is, and it fuels a lot of the problem.
Well, we are here at the Eugenia Convention, and that was what I was going to talk to you about then as well. That have you come to this many years in the past? Or
I've been to every one of the Eugenia ones. Yeah, okay. It's one of my favourite ones.
So you make a point to come over here for this?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm a big theme park junkie. So Orlando, obviously, is that's great. So
I've got early, stay late.
Absolutely. A couple of parks before the convention starts, and a couple over the next couple of days. And also, I'm a huge escape room fan.
Okay.
And Richard had this incredible escape room van here this time, so I wanted to see that. It's a interesting model of the escape room type.
Yeah.
So that was great, and a lot of friends here.
Is that what brings you back, or just the friends?
There's some English friends who've come over this year, which makes it more fun. There's some American friends that I just tend to see either here or Magic Live, and that's sort of two main conventions I get over. But I'd love to try and get over for some others as well. But they're the two main ones that I come over for. And catching up with friends and seeing new acts. It's a great convention to see people that are.
What's been a standout here for this year for you?
I've seen Hector Mancha at FISM.
But
in terms of his close-up and his lecture and his little sort of cameo appearances, I thought that was great. I'm trying to think of new acts I haven't seen. Lucy Darling I've not seen before, although I've worked with Chris the backstage at Magic Live, so that was great seeing her character. Ben Seidman I had not seen.
Seidman.
Some people do pronounce it.
Seidman.
Ben. Call him Ben.
Yeah.
Ben I hadn't seen before.
Probably hadn't seen Pat Hazel do his comedy act. Have you?
No, but I'd seen him at Magic Live.
Yeah, he was MC.
And also, yeah, he did a English TV show in the 80s.
Really? Wow.
And had never seen him since then. So it's always quite weird when you see someone.
Yeah.
And then heard about the whole thing with Seinfeld and doing the warm-ups for that, and then his sort of going off into more stand-up shows.
Right.
So it's always interesting when you see someone who's when I graduated from university and started, I graduated in business, and my professor used to come down and see me doing this street show and the Bizarre Bath, the walk, and he always used to say, it's good to see when someone gets over the wall. And that was his description of someone breaking out of the sort of the narrow focus of going down
with
a single
train.
Path. And someone just going, I can do something a bit different with what I've got. And
find a successful career doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And following what you want to do, following your dreams, and saying, maybe there is another way of doing this, and using magic in a slightly different way.
I was going to say, we'll talk a little bit about this evening's show then also, just to kind of wrap up over here, that we had Lucy Darling, as I said, with Nick DeFott, who had done, I thought, an excellent job of kind of, especially last minute, kind of being thrown together, being a tag team, kind of an MC group. And then Romani, you see all the time, I guess.
Absolutely, yes. So, good British contingent in the show. So it's Romani and John Archer.
It was closed with him. It started with Romani and closed with John.
So that's great. So they're both very good friends, so that's nice to see them doing well at a convention overseas. So that was great. I'm just trying to think.
The guy who was from Chicago that I'd forgotten his name there.
David Kovar. Kovac.
Okay.
I'm not doing well on names at the moment. It's been a long convention. Very little sleep. Yeah. I mean, I've always had good intentions of going to a theme park the following day, and that never quite materialises. So I hadn't seen him before, so that was great. That was really. I love seeing new acts, because so often you see acts that you've seen before.
Right.
Especially if they're patter acts, and maybe they put in one or two new lines
a new bit. Piff and Pop, you're not going to see that
again. So, but seeing someone who's honed something and you come in once they've honed it, and you see it as as a whole new fresh thing. So that's always, again, it's a good reason to come over here. As a Brekkie, the first time I saw him was at Genie, and that was the same thing. It was like this guy who sort of seemed to have come from nowhere with a really individual style, and
Well, you probably saw John or Piff kind of develop his act from what in the UK, from where he was and how he started wearing his dragon costume.
Yeah, I mean, bizarrely, I only worked with John once at a comedy club in England, and that was it. So it was this sort of I was viewing it like everyone else, as this sort of meteoric rise through through Fool Us and AGT, and then coming over here. It's strange that there are some acts that you seem to see all the time or work with all the time, and then there are other ones that you don't, and or you hear about for a long time, and suddenly they you're going, they've cropped up, and they cross your radar. So John was literally, it was just one, and Edinburgh Festival is the big time to go and see people doing their one-man shows, and that's where John was doing a lot of shows up there and sort of getting very well established, and that runs at the time, peak time for the comedy walk that I run.
Right.
So that I tend not to be able to get up to the Edinburgh Festival, which is a great show.
I'd like to go and see that sometime. I've not been to that.
Have you never been?
Never been.
It is unbelievable. Yeah. It is, yes. It's 7,000 shows, I think.
Wow.
It's
a month or a weekend, or how?
It's over a month, but just hundreds in the weirdest venues.
I mean, anything will open up
as a venue.
Even a car.
A friend of mine did a show in a car, so he was in the front seat. And so it's three seats per show. He sold that almost immediately, which obviously, you know, he was very, very happy with. And the front seat was slightly more expensive than the two back seats because you saw the side of his face as opposed to the back of his head.
Yeah.
But yeah, the people who've done shows in backs of lorries, they built a little theatre in the back of a lorry, nightclubs, shops, anything. People's front rooms. So it is. It is. Great, and just seeing really different stuff there from around the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, you should absolutely get there.
Well, as we wrap up, I want to remind all the listeners, by the way, that one of the things that Richard Kaufman had mentioned was that he was kind of taking a poll saying, look, 2021 is going to be when we have the FISM in Quebec, Canada, and it's going to be in August, and he was wondering whether there would be enough people to justify having this convention, again, the Genie Convention in 2021, and it sounded like that there were enough, by a show of hands, people would attend, and so he said, okay, we're going to do it. So he's made a verbal commitment, so it looks like we're going to be doing it again in 21.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think each convention does have a demographic and a following. Fan base, but a following is a much better word. And FISM is this sort of weird beast that, travels around the world. And there are people who go to every single one. And you do get a lot of people who will just go to it once because it's nearby or, in their neck of the woods. So, yeah, so, I mean, I think people always worry that it's going to drain the sort of local convention circuit around that time, but it is a different thing. And I'm a big FISM fan. I've been to the last five or six or seven, I think. Yeah. I'll be at Quebec, but I'll be here as well because they are different things. The FISM is such a big part of that is the competition and seeing new people, and it is non-stop. And then this is just a different. It's a different vibe. Yeah, different vibe, and it's great. So yeah, I'd recommend both of them equally.
Well, Noel, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. I know you've been busy, throughout here with everybody else, and I'm glad we had a chance to chat and kind of catch up a little bit. And look forward to seeing you the next time, next year probably somewhere.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Okay, till next time. That was Noel Britton, president of the Magic Circle. Scotty out. All right, so the evening show is over, and one of the people that we were talking to, one of the people actually that's opened the show, is we were just talking with Noel Britton, and he was saying, we had Brits open and we had Brits closed.
Yeah.
And I'm here with Romani. Hey, how are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm really well. I'm really well. So
are
happy
you
to be here.
Excited about being here?
I'm so happy to be here. I want to come back like today. I want to come back already.
What have you enjoyed most, aside from the anticipation of your show?
Well, the friendliness of everybody. So it's been so relaxed and so friendly. But the thing was that I hadn't done anything. So although it was friendly, now it's been really lovely because everyone's come up and talked to me.
Yes.
And I just wish we had a couple more days or a week. Oh, it's
well,
great.
There are several people I know who come over who've come earlier and staying late because they want to go to the theme parks and
I do too. I'm going tomorrow and the day after.
Oh, you are?
And it's already really late, but I'm going to get up really early and go to Disney. I love it.
Yeah, I was just talking with Tim Ellis, and he and Craig Mitchell are going to get up at 6 a.m. to, or actually, going to get up earlier.
Tim Ellis from Australia?
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw him years ago. I'm a huge.
I'm a huge fan of him. 5 minutes ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's amazing. So there's my heroes are here. So like Jim Steinmeier, and David Kaye, and Paul Harris, and we're just hanging out. And it's like whoa, it's amazing.
It's a little bit different, kind of a feel here because it is a smaller convention with a lot of really top people. These are a lot of professional people.
And Peter Samuelson, and we're all just hanging out and having coffees, and it's just amazing, amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Learned here or bought or saw was like most exciting for you that kind of comes to mind?
Well, I've met a young man called Ryan Schultz, and I haven't really enjoyed card tricks for a long time, and he is doing such good card tricks that I'm like re-inspired.
Ryan Schultz. You know Ryan Schultz or David?
We
got David Kaye here with us too.
I've just met him, and he's got amazing, wonderful magic.
Yeah.
And he's taught me a few things, and I'm going to go back and learn that. Plus, I bought some fantastic coins from Mark Mason that I can't wait to try.
Yeah. You know, I guess you don't see Mark Mason over there like you used to since he moved back over here.
So,
but I mean, you got like Michael Vincent over there.
Oh, my God.
Teaches stuff,
he's a god. But, you know, I don't even aspire to his level. So, you know, I'm more like...
So you start with Ryan Schultz.
No. Well, you know what? So Ryan Schultz's stuff is easy but really effective.
I understand.
And really entertaining.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to learning that. And I'm looking... I had stopped doing close-up for a while because all my close-up stuff had become my stage stuff. So Chords Across, Hindu Thread, Gypsy Curse, and now I haven't got anything left for close-up. And I was like, But yes, now I've got a whole bunch of close-up here. So I'm really excited.
There's not a lot of restaurants or places you can do close-up, except, like, I guess at...
In England, we do banquets.
Starting to do that more than... Okay, because I remember that there weren't...
No, you do parties and everything.
Weddings and things.
Yeah, I don't tend to. I'm tending to do stage because theatre is my love. But yes, I'm looking forward to doing that again. Yeah, amazing. And I'd like to be invited back to American conventions because I love America and I haven't been hired before. And I'm like, excuse me, because I like it.
So, people listen to this podcast who are convention organizers ought to listen up and go and book
you. It's a blatant plug. And also, it's funny, I did this blatant plug, didn't I, in the show?
Yeah.
I got the picture of my book and gave up bookmarks to everybody.
Bookmarks to everybody coming in the door.
Right, because I think the book is about never giving up on a dream. It's taken me 25 years to get an act together, seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really, really important, not just for magicians, but everyone, especially young people, to realize you just keep persisting, and that's the magic that allows dreams to come true. So tonight, everyone's been coming up asking me for autographs and things, which is something I dreamed about. Not that it's important, but it's just lovely for people to like your work.
Right.
And that's something I dreamed about forever.
And it's not something that you're talking about empowering young girls or women. Is it specifically for them?
No, it's
everybody.
Everybody.
That's kind of my point. I was thinking for everybody. Yeah.
So the response to it is that I've had people writing back saying they're taking the art class. They're going back to Jeff McBride's Mystery School.
Right.
They're getting their dreams out again and dusting them off.
Right.
And that's the thing. It's like, be persistent.
Right. And so the title of your book is Spun from Gold? Or
Spun into Gold,
okay.
The Secret Life of a Female Magician, and it's on Amazon.
And
I'm on a world mission to get everyone to read it.
So that's what I was going to say. So people can go and find that. It is through
Amazon. And also it's going to be on Audible, if you like listening to Audible books, in about 2 weeks' time. And I've read it. It's taken a year to do.
Oh, you were doing the reading.
I read it.
I was going to say, did you have a professor by profession? So you did it.
I've done it, and I edited it.
And so then you worked with something out with Audible, so this way that they're going to be doing. That's excellent.
No, it's fantastic.
Just in the next couple of weeks. Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be going out tomorrow morning. I mean, this
I'm
putting it up tonight, so people will be hearing this straight away. So
Thank you so much, Scott.
Well,
that was
of
amazing.
Course, will they be able to purchase it through you directly?
If they write to me, and I'm...
I mean, you can make more if you get it direct, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I post it. It's actually easier on Amazon, you know, because it's all over the world.
Yep.
And I'm on romanymagic.com.
And that's Romhany.
No, that's Paul Romhany, who's an amazing performer from Canada. He's my dear friend.
Yeah.
Romhany, so Romany, magic.com.
Yeah, no H in it.
Otherwise, you'll get to Paul Romhany, and he's a,
he'll
a
send
whole
it back to you.
New other thing.
Exactly right. Well, great job here this evening, and I'm glad
you
enjoyed
so
the convention then as well.
Yay. Well, yes, and next stop, New York, I think.
Yes, that's right. You'll be right behind Darren, right?
Right. Thank you so much.
I was just with him a couple of weeks. I saw his show over there.
He's
so
great.
It's great. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Romhany. Scotty out.
So one last thing before we close is just a reminder to everybody about the contest that we have for free lecture notes. We have 12 copies of the lecture notes, or PDF copies actually, from Ian Kendall, and he has provided us with 6 copies, PDF copies of his 2012, I believe it was, or maybe 11, I think it was 2012 lecture notes, and then also those from 2019. So maybe it was 11, because I think he does it every other year, so it had been on the odd year. Nevertheless, so we're going to have a total of 12 lecture notes that are available. If you go to the episode number 522, there at the bottom of the blog for that day 2 update from the Genie Convention, you'll see a form that you can fill out, and we're going to be running this just for a couple of weeks, and so if you're listening to this after mid-October, I've forgotten what the date is, but I believe it's the 15th-ish. It says there on the blog. But after that's up, then it will no longer be available. This may continue to run. Well, this will be in the archives forever. But the contest won't last. So go sign up. And he's got a dozen copies, so you have a pretty good chance. So, and we've had a great time at the convention, and you've heard a lot of recaps from everybody else of what's been going on. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. This has been just a fantastic and wonderful convention on so many different levels. And again, I think Randy Pitchford and Richard Kaufman are really to be commended for bringing in some really top talent from around the world. That's in any other convention. If you get two or three or four of these people, that's a real coup. But to have just act after act that is just the top, you know, class A, they're wonderful. Nevertheless, it was great. And so you need to make a plan to attend when he announces that he's going to open up registration for 2013. So it'll be a couple months after the 2013, I think, 2023. Golly, that seems like a long 21. Sorry, 2021. And maybe 2023 also. It's too early in the morning. I'm just getting tired and kind of punchy. I haven't had but, I don't know, maybe 8 hours, 9 hours sleep total in the last 4 days. So, for the Magic Word Podcast in Orlando, Florida, this is from the Genie Convention, Scotty out.